Hi everyone, my name is Marianne C. I'm talking to you from Portugal, and I'm very happy to be the guest of Chavo on his World Vision podcast. Please continue listening to Chavo's wonderful podcast. He's a great, great podcast host.
Welcome to the Vivid Vision podcast. Thank you for tuning in and making your choice to win. This is the show we normally motivate and inspire. We give you tactical strategies to implement on your way to greatness. And now, here is your host, Chavo Umeni.
All right, welcome to Vivid Vision Podcast. My name is Chavo Umeni, and today I have a very, very interesting personality. His name is Damon Wells. Damon Wells is currently an army colonel on active duty stationed in Stuttgart, Germany. With over 28 year army career, he has served as commander at the battery, battalion, and brigade level. So right about now, I won't take much of our time. I'm going to let Mr. Damon speak to us. Mr. Damon, welcome to Vivid Vision Podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chavo. I really appreciate it. Really a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the introduction. And if you want, I can kind of get into some of my background because it really shapes kind of my thoughts and the way I see the way I'm going to explain some of my theories to you today.
Yes, please take it. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so you mentioned 28 years active duty in the Army, command at the battery, battalion, and brigade levels. Yes, true. But throughout that 28 years of essentially most of it being in some kind of leadership position, and really especially at that in those command positions, like you pointed out, battery, battalion, and up to brigade level, you learn a lot. So you get a chance to sort of build your leadership skills, and it's you know, the military is heavy in a specific type of leadership. So it's an interesting journey to start off as a young leader, get put in command positions when you're in your 20s, and then work another 10 years on staff for the opportunity to command at another level, and then do it again, work a few years on staff to have the opportunity to command at the brigade level, a higher level. So along the way, you kind of learn some stuff, and I'm really kind of fascinated with leadership, the principles of leadership, how to be a good leader, what impact does being a good leader have on your team and the teams adjacent to you, and how do you build your team to be the most efficient it can be. So over the course of, almost 28 years, I've kind of come up with some theories, and I'm happy to dive into them, but just generally, I have kind of a cyclical process it's a team building framework, but to me, since the team is the organization and the outputs of the team wholly depend on how functional that team is. And to me, the functionality of the team is really the responsibility of not the leader, but the leaders within the team. So I would tell you that there's really four P's that you need to focus on, and this is the team building framework. And the first P is people, because your team is comprised of people. That's the most basic unit you can get to. So you have to understand those people, and what the interaction between leaders and the rest of the people needs to be. And the second thing is partnerships. And what I really mean is the teams and the interaction. And what we want to focus on here is how cohesive can we get this team? How much can I get the people on this team to care about each other? And then to care about the team, as an identity, the team as a concept. And then the next P is practice. And what I mean here is what we do. So it's for us in the military, it's the training. How good is our training? And that falls back on cohesion, and it falls back on trust. And then for, when you're talking maybe corporate or industry, you're talking about how well do we do our job? What is our output, and how efficient can we make our output, and how innovative can we be? So practice, and as you progress along this from people to partnerships to practice and really change the way you focus from kind of small to big, at the practice level, once you emerge from building really cohesive teams, what you start to see is something from complexity theory is called emergence, but here it's leadership emergence, where you go from what is essentially hierarchical organizations with the leader at the top and the followers that are closer to the bottom, to something like a heat map where you may have some leadership coming from the bottom, and the requirement for leadership directly from the top is mitigated, is attenuated, because leadership's coming from throughout the unit. And then finally, the last one, and then I'll hand it back over, is purpose. And I think if you do these previous three P's well, what you end up with is a solid team of people who actually care about why they do what they do, and they care about the people to the left and right. They care about, you know, I don't want to let just the team as a concept, I don't want to let the team down, and I certainly don't want to let the people on the team that I actually care about down. And what that translates to, especially in the military, is a much higher level of discipline. In other words, I will change my behavior, I'll moderate my behavior both on and off duty, because I'm concerned about me being a reflection of the team. I'm concerned about, you know, my negative behavior bringing the team down or derailing the team from its goals. So that's kind of I call it the 4P or P4 model. Just kind of quickly run through that. I'm happy to dive deeper if you like, but I'll hand it back over to you.
Wow. Demo, that sounds really interesting. But you speak more like an author of a book. Do you have a book?
A book? I'm working on a book. I'm working on a couple books. The first one will not be specifically about this P4 model. That's probably my second one. The first one I'm going to do talks about leadership. Again, you can see how much I really think about leadership and I really think about teams. This book that I'm working on now is about leadership, and I kind of turn leadership into not quite a parable, but a journey. And to me, leadership is something you learn. You have to build these skills. But if you go and look for a reference, there are so many versions of, you know, books or, you know, military doctrine or, you know, instructions on how to be a good leader. And, you know, there's some congruence between those, but the reality is, like, anybody can say these are the characteristics or qualities of a good leader. And generally, you know, obviously, they're positive attributes of a person. So you have to sort of draw the line. Are they just positive attributes that anybody would be a good person if they had? Or do they do something special when you put them into a leadership role, and do they translate to leadership in the absence of other characteristics? And a lot of them don't. Some of them just good people skills, right? So the book, you know, it's, you consider it an explorer's journey. And the first kind of section of the book is general leadership skills, and I compare those to an explorer's quest. So on a quest, it's generalized. I'm going somewhere far away. The experience is what I'm after. And you could draw a parallel. There's general leadership skills that are good for any industry. Anybody, if they exercise these skills, will have influence over other people in a positive manner. So things like trust, being able to see your organization, build a vision, build a strategy, good communication skills, for example, the ability to inspire people, compassion. Now, one of those by itself doesn't necessarily equal leadership, but together and applied correctly can sort of translate to leadership. And then the second sort of section of the book I'm going to write is more specific skills. I compare these to guideposts along your journey. Specific, you have to know how to get to these things, and there's a specific reason to go to them. So now think of your leadership skills. Instead of being general skills, you have to tailor your skills for the industry that you're a leader in. And that could be healthcare, that could be the military, could be tech, could be nonprofits, could be anything. But I would argue that each industry, because of the people that are sort of drawn to that industry, will have specific leadership qualities that make you better in that industry as a leader. The people that go to those jobs have specific personality styles, perhaps. The team dynamics of the typical team, the rate of innovation or the rate of, you know, if you think, you know, there's certain industries where you have to do everything by the book, that draws a certain type of person that's successful in an industry. And there's other industries that innovation and being creative is really the thing you want. So you can see how leadership styles would differ across industries. And then finally, the third section will be you as the leader, because you can't, my theory is, you can't just take anyone and put them in any industry and then they will have the same level of success as everyone else. I think there's, you know, we as people have certain personality traits that make us more suited for certain industries and for certain types of leadership skills. So it's important to understand yourself and build your leadership qualities based on your personality, what you're most suited for. And then you have to understand, you know, again, going back to the P4, the people that make up this industry, you need to know how they operate too. And is that congruent between your personality and sort of the team dynamics? Because if it's not, probably the wrong place to go. But you can see there's three layers of depth, and I think they're all worthy of some kind of study for leadership. But each of them is unique enough that you can't say this is leadership and just give it one sort of stamp.
Yeah. Do you know why I asked you that question?
No, I do not.
Okay. Why I asked you the question is because most people talk about leadership, but it's not everybody that writes a book, that writes about a topic that has really, really practiced it. Like you said, it's all about the experience.
Yeah.
Get what I'm saying? It's all about the experience. So I want to ask you, did you learn this from the army or was it a personal thing?
So because I've been in the army so long, I would have to say that yes, I learned it from the army. So the way it kind of works is, especially when you're in for a long time, you go to some schools, and believe it or not, a lot of the schools we go to in the Army are skill-related schools, not necessarily leadership schools. Like, you know, here's how to be a good leader. So you don't really learn much of that in school. You learn it doing it, being a leader or being a commander. So the way it typically works is you come in, you're very young, you're in a leadership position, and you do that for, you know, 1 to 3 or 4 years. Then you go to some kind of school. And while you're in the school, you've got, at least this is my experience, you've kind of got time to digest how you performed in that leadership role, sort of build some theories. And I really like leadership, so maybe I'm kind of an outlier on this, but the way I've used those school opportunities, and they're anywhere from 3 months to a year, so sometimes they're quite long. So you figure out, you process what you did as a leader, and you sort of think about it, and the stress is off because you're in an academic environment. So what I would do is kind of, and I got more into this the longer I was in the Army, but sort of model out what I thought, like, you know, as a leader, you know, here's sort of the model of the way I led and how, what kind of reactions, and did we do well or not? Can I put a label on this? Can I sort of draw out the cause and effect of how I did this? And so then you go to school and you sort of, even if you don't do it formally, you mentally process, you know, the previous couple of years of whatever leadership role you were in. And in a lot of cases, because it's an academic environment, you'll talk about previous roles, and maybe not necessarily in a leadership capacity, but you'll talk about them one way or the other. So you do that, you figure, you know, you put some put some models together, even if informally, and then you go back out and you go into a leadership role, maybe staff, and a few of us go into commander roles. So there's a deliberate selection process to pick commanders, so not everybody gets to do that. But if you do, you go from staff, where you work directly for a commander, to command positions with command authority, and you sort of guide the vision, the direction, the training, the output. And if you deploy, you know, somewhere, that's all your responsibility. So when you're in a command position, you see your job as a leader a little differently than you do as a staff officer. So I guess what I'm trying to explain is you have your schooling opportunities where you really process your role as a leader in a low stress environment. Then you have staff leadership where you try to understand and give the commander what he or she wants. You have to, you know, anticipate and think about it from their point of view. And then you have roles where you are the commander, so you have to understand your staff capabilities and understand how to communicate and think and, you know, articulate vision and all that stuff. So you get a lot of opportunities, and it's cyclical on how to be a leader. So because of that, yes, I have a passion for leadership, and it's just something that's very interesting to me. But at the end of the day, I don't know that I would care about it this much if I wasn't in the Army. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I find it really interesting because it's coming from a soldier. I'm talking to a soldier right now. So from where you come from, Demo, which is the Army, you are going to correct what I'm going to say now. I may not be correct. I may not be right about it. So I want you to correct me. Is it not what you guys do is rule, command? Without, from what I know, my understanding, I want you to correct me. It's all about command. You do not really care about the people you are giving those commands. They just have to follow the instruction. How do you bring in your leadership, this your ideology of leadership? How do you bring it to leading people, ruling? I know the Army used the word ruling, right?
No.
Let's say the military rule.
So rule, I think you're saying rule, right? Ruling?
Yeah.
No, it depends on the definition of leadership, right? So, I can fill in the gaps on that for you. So,
okay.
Yeah, so, you know, each military service, and you got to remember the U.S. military has Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, so different branches. Army is a ground force, Air Force is the air, Navy is the sea.
Yeah.
So each will take a different approach to the way they conduct business, basically. And because of that, each one will have a different approach to almost everything they do, to include leadership. The Army's doctrine on leadership will look a little bit different than the Air Force or the Navy's or the Marine Corps' doctrine on leadership. So it's kind of the way they see it. In the Army, we have a definition, provide purpose, motivation, and direction, and you want the organization to go in a positive direction. You want your influence on the people in the organization to make the organization better in order to accomplish whatever the organization's mission is. But we spend a lot of time concerned about, are we taking care of our people? And the reason is just the easy, simple reason is, you know, people will perform better when they feel like they're in a safe environment. That may be counterintuitive for a military thing, but in general, at work, if you feel like you're in a safe environment, you're gonna give more to your work. And what I mean by that is, you know, as a leader, that's sort of your job, is to figure out how to get the people that work for you to do the missions that is required to the best of their ability without forcing them to. In other words, they want to do their mission or their job to the best of their ability. And the more you have to be heavy-handed about that, the less safe they feel, the less sort of intellectual freedom they have, the less optimal your output is going to be. So I found, I guess the easy way to say this, I found is if you give people a little intellectual freedom and delegate, but don't micromanage and let them figure out how to do the task instead of telling them exactly how to do the task, generally you get a pretty good output, a pretty positive output. However, there may be times when, especially in the military, when some direct leadership intervention or, you know, direct here's how we're going to do it is required. If there's just not enough time to do some problem solving and I know the answer and I just need people to do it and we're in a emergency or, you know, some kind of situation that requires immediate action, then that's okay. And I think everybody understands that in the military. But generally, yeah, what we want is we want inspirational leadership. We want to trust the people we follow, and because they're competent and we know they're taking care of us and they have our best interests at heart. And when that happens, you're more inclined to fill in the gaps and not have to be told what to do all the time, but understand what the organization needs and do it without being told. Does that answer it for
yeah.
you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. From what you said, I believe that it's much better to motivate people, inspire people, than to force them to do what you want them to do. It will be more effective if you inspire them and they do it willingly and they even do it well. Is that right?
Yeah, just imagine two different leaders, right? One, and again, remember I referred to personality styles and what your better leadership skills. So you can imagine one leader who doesn't have a lot of faith in people and assumes everyone's dumber than him or her. And so he or she takes great pride in telling everyone what to do, and that you know, that gives that person intrinsic power. Look how powerful I am, they do exactly what I tell them. And then you have another leader who is inspirational and has let his or her team sort of grow and figure things out on their own and do great things that are innovative. And that leader doesn't have to tell anyone anything except for a little, maybe a nudge here and there, or maybe give some really general guidance. Hey, you know, next week we need to be here with this project. And so maybe both are comfortable in their roles, but which team feels better about being on that team? So if you're exactly what to do all day, probably not that motivating. If you've got freedom to figure out your own problems and come up with your own solutions, and you know, that tends to make people feel better, be more motivated about solving problems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, Damon, what would you consider to be the best qualities of a leader? Something to be considered, the quality to be considered in a leader?
It's a good question. So there's a couple things. To be a great leader, I think you have to care about being a great leader, first of all. And that means you have to sort of study your craft. And what I mean by that is you have to be very self-aware and study not just what impact you're having on your team, but sort of how, like the method you communicate, what, you know, what the response is. You have to sort of be a student of the interactions between you and your team, and then sort of step back and just watch your team interact, and then do the, you know, the mental calculus on, okay, I'm watching this interaction, I'm watching the output. What can I do? What can I insert into this complex system as an example? What variable can I introduce to make them more efficient, to care more about their job, to care more about each other? So being a little bit analytical, I think just comes from caring. Like, I want to make this system better. So what can I do to make the system better? So that's one thing. And that's sort of the big general thing. Yeah, so it's a good question. You know, what does make a good leader? I think the first thing, the first sort of quality you need to have is to care about being a leader so much that you want to study it. You're sort of a student of being a leader. And what that really means is being cognizant of the impact you have on the team, being cognizant of things like, am I facilitating trust? Is there something I can do to make the team perform better? Is there something I can do to make them have a more positive outlook on what they do? Is there a way to measure the cohesion between, like, what's the team dynamic? Does everybody have a general good feeling about being on this team? Do they like it? Or are there people that don't? And if so, why? Do they need to go? Are they, you know, not good members of the team? You got to be a student of all of the team dynamics. Like I said, you know, building trust is really the first sort of benchmark of facilitating or nurturing a good team. You know, people don't trust you, they'll be uncomfortable following you. If they don't have trust in their teammates, it may never come up, but it paints how they feel about being on the team. And it will really be a limiter. It'll attenuate how much effort they're really willing to put into what they do for the team, especially when times get tough. Back to cohesion, like, you have to be sort of a student of cohesion. I'll tell you, at least in my line of work, cohesive teams will always win. Because, you know, if I have this unconditional love, if I care about my teammates, you know, to the max extent that's reasonable, if I care about either the reputation of the unit or the output of the unit, you know, most people in that situation will put a lot of effort into making sure that their team is successful at their own expense, to sacrifice their own time, resources, to be uncomfortable to get there. That cohesion goes a long way. You don't get cohesion without having trust. So again, that sort of ties back to good leader will know, or at least be inquisitive enough to sort of investigate how, you know, the personal dynamics of this team. How do I get trust? How do I get cohesion? And then, you know, you got to figure out, what is the thing this team does? What are we here for? Why does this team exist? And worst case scenario, as a leader, you may come to the conclusion that the thing this team thinks it's supposed to do is not the thing that makes this team valuable to the organization. So you really need to do a lot of sort of, you know, investigation on why the team exists. And then once you know, once you can clarify that, and it's agreed upon by not only the folks on your team, but the larger organization, you as the leader, one way to do it is either you can come up and craft a vision and a strategy. Better still, get your team together and help them determine what is the vision for this team. Where do we want to be in 2, 3, 5 years? What's our strategy for getting there? And then really what you want is start with maybe a vision and then back that thing off until it gets to each person on the team can articulate, you know, these are the things I have to do on a daily, weekly, monthly, whatever basis to get the team closer to that vision. And I care enough about the team and about my, you know, teammates that I will not let the team down. I will make sure that I do these things to get us there. So you kind of have to understand all of that. You have to care and be inquisitive enough about all that. So, you know, kind of like I talked in the beginning, there's general leadership skills or specific ones. To me, a good leader will understand the difference, you know, between the two and be in tune with the fact that, hey, my team is different than every other team for these reasons. Whether it's the industry we're in, specific output that's required for the larger organization, or just the people are so unique and dynamic, which they always are. but you got to understand why your team is unique, and then what do you need to do to make that unique team the best it can be. So I don't know if I rambled on that one, but I think that's probably the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a whole lot. From what you're saying, it takes a whole lot to be a leader. Nobody can just wake up and say, I am a leader. It has to be on works, right?
Well, that's the thing. You can wake up and say, I'm a leader. And, there are certain leadership theories, principles or paradigms that you could be a leader just because you're in the position of a leader. And you could argue that doesn't make you, the difference is you're not a good leader. You're not an inspirational leader. You're not someone people would choose to follow. But you could be a leader just by virtue of the rank you wear in the military, but you may not be a very good. So
what advice would you give to an emerging leader based on your experience?
I'd break it down into three things. And the first thing, very obviously, is learn leadership skills. Because I don't know when I actually started to really, I was a leader for a long time before I figured out that, I should start reading and researching and putting a little effort into being a great leader instead of just doing whatever comes natural when you're in a leadership position and just assuming you're good enough and that's okay. So the first thing is learn leadership skills. Be deliberate about learning leadership skills. And that's reading books. It doesn't matter if the book is right or wrong. It just matters that you're learning about someone else's viewpoint about leadership. That's important. So if you're gonna learn leadership skills, you have to understand that, again, there's just general skills that generally are, good people skills that equate to you being someone that people will follow. You can build trust. You know how to work team dynamics to build trust. You can articulate, you can see the need for, you can put energy into it and figure out what is the vision for this team? Where does this team need to go and how do we get there? You can communicate well. That's a big one. I've seen some folks that are, good-hearted people, but lack communication skills. And sometimes that's just because you have introvert qualities. Could be other reasons, but communicating is a big one. Being able to inspire people, and that one's a little, that one's tougher to figure out because everybody's got different sort of hot buttons on what inspires them, but that's a big one. And then being able to have some compassion, because like we talked about, even in the military, we care about our people. How do you make the people understand that you have their best interests at heart, and not just, not just assume that they're automatons and have no emotions. And then not to belabor it, but by industry, specific skills related to what you do, and then understand yourself. The sooner you can start to understand your own personal attributes, I think the more effective you'll be as a leader, because you'll know where to put your energy to maximize the things that you're naturally good at, and then the things to sort of not necessarily avoid, but things you can get by on because you're not naturally suited for those things. Learn how to lead yourself is huge. If you don't understand your own personality, if you can't get yourself to do the things you need to do, then you're probably gonna have a hard time getting other people to do the things they need to do. And then I would say, do hard things. Do things that make you uncomfortable. Do things that you're a little nervous about, whether it's in a leadership role or not, because what you need to do is learn yourself to grow, to make yourself uncomfortable, out of your comfort zone. It goes a long way. Second thing, learn how to be a good team player. The team is everything. Cohesive teams always win. Learn how to create and understand and communicate shared goals. Learn how to build those within an organization. And then you, as the leader, sometimes have to be the flexible one to make the team succeed. You have to be the one that is uncomfortable to get the team to succeed. And then, like I said at the beginning, the third one I'd really drill down on, learning your own personality. And these three things are kind of recursive because, you know, point one's a little bit of point one ties into point three, a little bit of point three ties into point two. But at the end of the day, the three things are: learn your own personality, learn how to be a good leader based on what you're good at, where your passions lie, learn how to be a good team player, and then learn those leadership skills under the subset of your own personality. How's that?
Yeah, from what you're saying now, you're saying that without a team, there wouldn't be a leader, right?
Yeah, that's right. There's always going to be a leader, no matter the team.
Yeah. So, but most people, some people who are leaders do not see themselves as part of a team, but they see themselves as, I don't know, like, they are not part of the team. They're just leading the team. They're just supervising the team. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I say you are correct, and that is exactly how some leaders see themselves. And I would say, because I've thought about this before, you know, a team is a complex system. It's by definition, complexity is a group of humans trying to do a shared goal. Sometimes, as a leader, you need to step outside of the system to see what the behavior of the system as a whole is. What is this team doing? But the reality is that you stepping outside of the system is an abnormal state for the system. You are part of that complex system. So you always have to consider that you are in this system, you are part of the team, and only temporarily get to step out to understand the system from a higher perspective, just to be able to direct the, maybe the system is getting off course or maybe it's not, but you need to see what it's doing to do some analysis and maybe make some corrections. But at the end of the day, you're still part of that team. And if you don't consider yourself part of the team, then you're gonna have a hard time getting the team to perform optimally towards whatever goal it's going after.
Hi, I'm Terry Tucker, author of Sustainable Excellence, the 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life. I'd like to encourage you to reach out and listen to Vivid Vision Podcast with Shevo. He's a remarkable young man, and I think you need to spend the time to listen to what he has to say. Thank you very much.
That's very true. And if they don't do it the way you're saying it now, there's going to be a lot of strife whereby you see the teammates trying to take over him. There will be hatred. There will be gossips. There will be fights, a lot of quarrels. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Again, what you want is you want trust and you want cohesion. And if you don't, like, one of the ways you get cohesion, just a general sort of principle, is shared hardships. When we do things that are uncomfortable together, we bond a little bit. We sort of, that just is a natural human thing. So if you as a leader or anybody on the team, doesn't participate in the difficult things that the team is doing, you miss those bonding opportunities. So you become sort of this outsider. And then as a leader of the team, what you don't want to do is make it look like or give the team the impression that either, you know, you're too good to participate, or for whatever reason you don't need to participate, especially in the more difficult things as a team.
Wow. Thank you very much. Talking about inspiration, you talked about inspiration. I want to ask you, what sources of inspirations or mentors has influenced your leadership journey? How have they imparted you your development as a leader?
So inspiration is always a funny one because, you know, sometimes, you know, for the team, something inspiring kind of gets the whole team. But a lot of times, inspiration is a very personal thing. Like what really drives you is very personal. But what you want to do is you want to find the thing that sort of motivates and energizes the team, but you also want to have that vision because inspiration can sometimes have a expiration date on it. It's emotional, it's a mood thing. So you got to be able to provide inspiration sometimes, but at the end of the day, what you really want to do is make sure that they care enough about the team to stick to whatever it is we said we were going to do. I would say, you know, over the course of my career, inspiration is transient. It comes and it goes. But you always sort of revert to whatever, you know, you can kind of trace back whatever got you to that inspired state. Is always there. You can always remember what that was, but you may have a different mood or you may experience a different emotion, but whatever got you there still matters. So you sometimes have to do that same thing without a source of inspiration. It's because it's something you've decided you want to do. The thing that kept me going, I guess, is just, you know, for the first, I don't know, probably decade in the military, I just really liked the military. So it didn't take me much in the form of inspiration, just doing the things we do. And if they were routine, you know, mundane things, I still really loved the military. I loved the Army. So, you know, for the first decade or so, just being in the military was inspiration enough. And there was, some point in probably the latter half of my career in the Army, just having done many, many leadership jobs, being inquisitive and sort of, you know, I had the, you know, just wondering of, you know, how does this actually work? You know, what makes this person want to do the thing? And, you know, when I say it this way, but this person doesn't. So just being real inquisitive about how leadership works and how team dynamics and psychological aspects of leadership, and then every now and then you get a really good leader that most of the time, you know, because of the law of averages, they're somewhere in the middle, but sometimes you get really good ones that for whatever reason make you want to be on that team, make you want to do your job even a little better, make you want to expend your own resources, time, energy for the team. And it doesn't take many of those for someone like me to be really curious on, okay, what was the thing they did specifically? Whether it was something in a conversation or just the long-term effect of their behaviors on my perception or whatever, that inspired me to sort of study leadership a little better.
Oh, that's great. Okay, what about mentors? Maybe the books you read, wrote the book, the authors, people physically you met that really influenced you?
Yeah, so there's YouTube videos, there's books. I've read a few. There's authors like, you know, Simon Sinek is a good example for just articulating the things that I think most leaders, especially military leaders, and he does focus a little bit on military leaders, but things we intrinsically know that just haven't been articulated that well before. Simon Sinek does a really good job of that. There's many, many other authors to include, just books like for me, because leadership is such a tricky thing that's complex. I've started to get into reading books about complexity theory, complex adaptive systems, and then complexity applied to social systems and complexity leadership theory. So a lot of the way I see the world, the way I see myself as a leader and the way I see teams is based on that. So I've learned a lot from that. You know, I've had specific leaders in the past who motivated me, and I'll tell you, in the Army, because you're, especially as an officer, you're always in a leadership position, whether it's staff or command. So you're always an example. So Are you inspiring someone else to take on the behaviors that you exhibit? Or perhaps, you know, whatever, you have a behavior that works for you, works for the team, but something about it is, you know, someone on your team doesn't like it, so that goes in their sort of mental toolkit of not to do that thing that you did. There's just a lot of sources of, you know, especially in 28 years of, you know, how do you get to where you are now? But it's a combination of being a leader, being a commander, being in school, being asked to really think hard about leadership, and then being inquisitive enough to think even harder and study and see what academia has to say about not only leadership roles, but social systems and personality styles, team dynamics, and, you know, where, you know, the studies on team cohesion and cohesion in the military. So just being so curious about how teams work and how leadership works, to dig into it on my own.
I think everyone should hear what you're saying now. I don't know how the military is in the US, but I know where I am. The military do not see the civilians as, how will I put it? They see them less. They see them as lesser people. They call us bloody civilians.
Really?
I don't know how it is there. Yeah, I don't know how it is there. There's so much oppression, especially in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They oppress the poor. Mm-hmm. They oppress the poor, but they are very, very, very at the service of the rich, of the wealthy. They are at the service of the wealthy, but they oppress the poor people, the common people. That's what goes on here. So most times people just join the army because they want to be able to oppress their fellow men. I'm telling you what's going on here. I don't know how it is there. So what do you say about this? I don't know if you've heard that before.
Yeah, that's such, you know, that's such a cultural, and we talked about complexity, and that takes it to a whole new level where the cultural influences throughout time, you know, through, you know, how many decades gone back, how a society gets to that state. That is a very complicated, a very sticky kind of issue. To some extent, without coloring it with judgment, it's also kind of interesting. If you have, you know, the civilian population, it's not unheard of that there's sort of a rift between civilian population and either the government or, you know, factions of the government, such as the military or even police. So not unheard of, but it's, you know, it's definitely different here in the US, at least right now.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Damon, I want to ask you a question. It will be a very funny question, but I want to ask it.
Yeah.
If you were to lead the whole, I'm not talking about just America, just America, no. If you were in position to lead the whole nations in the world, what would you change?
So you asked to lead all the nations in the world?
Yes, what would you change about it?
Oh.
In today's world, what would you change?
So I think I would change, you know, factions and how factions or groups or political parties interact with each other. I think we've got to do a better job of understanding, if it's all the nations, right, then okay, what, how can all the nations contribute to what the world needs as a whole? while still maintaining their independence, their sovereignty, their own sort of goals on what they want as a nation and as a culture. But to change one thing, I don't know what that one thing would be, because it'd have to be for everybody. But I can certainly give it some thought.
Yeah, I understand. So let me know about you. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Demo.
Yeah, this was fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Demo, finally, what would you have to say to our listeners, everybody listening to you right now?
Yeah, so thanks, Shiva. What I would like to say, just want to repeat three things. One, learn leadership skills. Learn how to be a good leader. People need good leaders. Learn how to be a good team player. Take that seriously. You're on teams, whether it's your family or at work. Be a good team player. Make the team better. And then finally, learn about your own personality. Be self-aware. Try to expand what you know about yourself and make yourself a little better by being uncomfortable and learning something new every day. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Demo.
Okay, so
Demo, I'm taking much of your time. We'll tell our listeners bye-bye here now.
That was good. That was great.
All right. All right, Demo. Have a good day.
Yeah, you take care. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you very much,
Demo,
for having me.
Yeah, Demo, hold on. People listening to you, they want to connect with you. Do you have some sort of education classes you offer, or how can they reach you? Maybe social media or email.
Yeah, I can tell you. So on X, I am at Sum Leadership, SUM Leadership. I have a website, which is mainly a blog. If you go to www.summaryleadership.com, I can be reached by email at admin@summaryleadership.com.
All right. You heard that. All right. Thank you, Demo.
Thank you, Mr. Shivo. I really appreciate it. It was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope to have you again.
Absolutely. Just shoot me a note.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you so much for remaining with us to the end of today's episode on Vivid Vision Podcast. We had a wonderful guest today. Such an educative conversation. I hope you grabbed something from it. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would like you to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Share Visions. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Share Visions. Please like, share, comment, rate our podcast. That is very, very important to us. Rate our podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and also leave a comment on our episode. If you have something to say to us, you can send a voice note through our WhatsApp at +234 7039694929, and your comments will be added to the next episode. If you would also like to be a part of the show, just let us know in the comments. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. We see you again next time. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Vivid Vision Podcast. Make sure to visit our website at sharevisions.com. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are streamed, so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found a value in this show, we would appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/sharevisions. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at sharevisions. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Until next time, keep learning and keep growing. Share Visions. Inspired, share the vision.